Zodiac, a symbol that now stands for terror,
has killed five and says he's going to kill again.
Psychopath.
Remember, investigators say there were unusually high levels of chloroform found in Casey Anthony's trunk.
But again, OJ appears to be holding a gun to his head.
Police won't confirm a newspaper report that Dahmer has confessed to murder and cannibalism.
It's Murder Monday on the Joe and Alex Show. Listener discretion is advised.
Hey, we do Murder Monday. The reason why is to bring attention to Crime Stoppers of Central Indiana. They let you anonymously give tips. You can call them at 317-262-TIPS. Now, the murder, Alex, that you're doing today for Murder Monday, I've already seen a photo. It's posted up on our Instagram, so people can go follow us and check that out, at Joe and Alex Show. And on Twitter, same thing, at Joe and Alex Show. Tweet along. Let us know what you think about this, your thoughts on it. Use the hashtag Murder Monday so we can see those, and tweet us at Joe and Alex Show.
An hour and 10 minutes south of Indianapolis is a little town called Crothersville. It's a town known for its hometown hospitality and growing business expansions. But on January 25th, 2005, Crothersville became known for something else: the murder of 10-year-old fourth grader Katie Coleman. Katie Coleman is a typical fourth grade kid in 2005. She loves watching the Disney Channel and going to the bank with her mom to get a sucker. January 25th was a normal Tuesday, and Katie's mom, Angie, noticed that they were out of toilet paper. She called out to Katie and asked her to run down the street about two blocks away to Dollar General to grab some. Outside, it was bitterly cold, and Katie did not want to go out, but her mom pleaded with her, and Katie was a good girl who always tried to do what her mom asked, so she agreed. Angie had no idea that this was the last time she'd ever see her daughter alive. Katie puts on her coat and steps outside into the cold. What was supposed to be a quick errand turned into a nightmare for Katie's mom. An hour went by and Katie was nowhere to be found. Her mom starts to panic. Angie calls Katie's dad, Jonathan, and lets him know what's going on, and they immediately report her missing. The cashier at the Dollar General says Katie made her purchase and walked outside, so they know that she went missing as she was walking back home. Witnesses say a white truck had been seen driving around the same spot that Katie was last seen. Soon, an Amber Alert is issued for the surrounding area, and the entire small town of Crothersville is looking for Katie. Police, family, friends, and random volunteers comb the streets and nearby woods trying to find the missing 10-year-old, but they don't have any luck. It's as if she vanished into thin air. A few days pass, and there's still no sign of her. But after five whole days, a group of police investigators find the body of a little girl near a creek 15 miles from Katie's house. Despite some decomposition, police could tell that it was Katie. Not only had she been murdered, it appeared that she had been sexually assaulted. The entire community is devastated. But before they can even have time to process what has happened, a man comes forward and confesses to everything. He's 20-year-old Charles James Hickman. Charles was most known for being a high school dropout who dabbled in drugs and spent most days sitting in a lawn chair in front of his mom's trailer. He says that he and another guy named Timothy O'Sullivan abducted Katie when she was walking home because she had seen them selling meth. They were scared that she would rat them out to police, so they decided to silence her for good. The two men tie Katie's hands behind her back and take her near the creek that she was later found in, where they say that she accidentally fell in and drowned. But a few weeks later, Charles shocks investigators by admitting that he didn't kill Katie at all. He says he was lying about the entire thing, and not even one part of his confession had been true.
What?
Okay, that does not make any sense.
So he's found guilty of misleading a police investigation and possession of illegal substances. But a few months later, he's actually found guilty of molestation of a 13-year-old girl and is put in jail. So I guess something good came out of it. He did go to jail for that. But the police, who thought that they had caught a lucky break, were now headed back to square one and had a ton of unanswered questions. So detectives decide to do the only thing they can do, which is to go back to the creek where Katie's body was found. They start searching the creek for any clue that they can possibly find to lead them to the real killer. And that's when police find a cigarette butt in the same area and test the DNA. It's a match to the DNA on Katie's body, and police know that they have finally found the real killer of Katie Coleman. When we come back, I'll tell you about the man who murdered Katie and how Katie, from heaven, the little murder girl from Crothersville, gets her revenge. Someone, Shawnee, tweeted us at Joan Alex Show, said I'm saying the name of Katie's town wrong. I would never know. It's spelled C-R-O-T-H. Crothersville is how I'm reading it and have been reading it. She says it's pronounced Crothersville. Well, they should have put a U in there. How would I know? But I'll say Crothersville from now on.
As they say, Crothersville, Crosserville. You know, like either way, whatever you prefer to say. It's like tomato, tomato, I hear.
Is that what they say?
No, they don't say
that. She's saying
I
say it wrong. Okay, so I'll say it the way that Shawnee's saying it. I don't know who's right, Shawnee or what I was saying before.
Or maybe she's messing with you.
Who knows? But we left off with 10-year-old Katie Coleman of Crothersville, Indiana, being found murdered near a creek in January of 2005. After a random loser gave a false confession that stalled the investigation for 9 weeks and cost the police department over $100,000. Police get a break when they find a cigarette butt in the site that her body was found. They test the DNA found on the cigarette and the DNA found on Katie's body, and they actually get a match. The DNA belongs to a man named Anthony Stockelman. Not only did Anthony drive a white pickup truck like the one seen near the Dollar General that Katie went missing by, he was in town visiting his mother the day that Katie was killed. Forensic analysts also tied fibers found on Katie's body to carpet found in Anthony's mother's house. The DNA police collected present an ironclad case against Anthony Stockelman, and he has no choice but to plead guilty. Anthony has no previous criminal record. He worked at a factory in Seymour, Indiana, 15 miles away. I mean, nobody would have guessed that this guy was going to do this. In exchange for pleading guilty, the prosecutor takes the death penalty off the table. Anthony Stockelman gets life in prison. But his problems are just beginning, and here's where things get juicy. Anthony's story should have ended there, but he had no idea what fate had in mind for him. His time in prison was a lot harder than he ever had anticipated. As Anthony walked into Wabash Valley Correctional Facility, he's got no clue that a relative of Katie's has already been locked up there. Katie's cousin, 22-year-old Jared Harris, had gone to prison in 2000 for burglary and was staying in the exact same wing that Anthony Stockelman was assigned to.
Wait, how do they not know this? How do they not stop this?
Right? As soon as Anthony gets to prison, Jared starts threatening him out in the open but doesn't take action. It seemed like Jared was just trying to scare Anthony. But 3 days into Anthony's stay, Katie's cousin Jared slips into the cell that Anthony shared with another prisoner and hides. Anthony was out of his cell, but when Anthony returns, Jared locks the cell door before Anthony's cellmate can re-enter. Jared closes his hand around Anthony's throat and says, "I'm either gonna stab you and let you bleed to death, or I'm gonna tattoo you." Jared had somehow gotten his hands on a tattoo gun that he had managed to keep hidden from the prison guards. Anthony has to choose if he's going to die or be scarred for life. He chooses the tattoo. When Jared is done, in big, bold letters, the words "Katie's Revenge" are tattooed across Anthony's forehead.
On his forehead, wow.
You can see the picture right now on Instagram at Joe and Alex Show. When Jared is finished exacting justice for Katie, Jared throws the tattoo gun in a prison trash can and leaves. See that photo right now at Joan Alex Show. Man, is it powerful. When Anthony's cellmate comes back, he finds Anthony crying and laying on the floor and calls out to the guards. When the prison guards ask Jared about what he had done, he had zero remorse. He told investigators that he'd chosen that moment to attack because he was scheduled to move to a new prison level later that day, and it was the only chance that he'd have to enact his revenge. He was charged with battery and has had an additional 7 years added to his original 20-year sentence for breaking prison rules. Since the attack, Anthony Stockelman stays in a private prison cell. He eats alone, has recreation alone, and sleeps alone. A medical practitioner has agreed to remove Anthony's tattoo free of charge, but it's uncertain whether or not he's going to be able to really fully remove it because it's on there so deep and everything. Child molesters and child murderers, though, are notoriously disliked in prison, and proof of Anthony's crime on his forehead puts him in a very dangerous situation. But I think it was the perfect form of justice for Katie, and I think that he should be forced to live with it.
Wow, that is Murder Monday on the Joe and Alex Show. We're going to continue Murder Monday all this week on Tuesday and Wednesday, getting up to Halloween. We will do a different story, right?
Different story tomorrow at 7:30. Do not miss it. Tell all of your friends. It's a Murder Monday marathon only on the Joe and Alex Show.